And good morning, everyone, once again, and welcome to another episode. It's going to be a really interesting episode this morning. We may not end at 3 o'clock my time. We may just keep going, and Keith can just plug a couple of switches. And anyway, before we get to my guest this morning, let me give you some context. You're on the other side of midnight. You know that time when we look at things and we say, "My God, what if that were to happen in daytime? How would people react? How would they respond?" Well, we're going to find out for the next couple hours how people would respond to things in daylight, because things are happening in daylight. Have you been watching the news? Our president is now spending 2 days in Cuba before heading south to the most remarkable destination that, frankly, no one I've talked to, and we've talked to a number of people, they really don't understand what's going on, because after Cuba, the president is heading to Argentina. And at the end of that visit, he's going to spend Thursday afternoon, we believe, at a place called San Carlos de Bariloche, which, of course, for those of you who have been following this show and following David's work and following a lot of things that go bump in the night, let me quote from my friend and colleague Joseph Farrell. "For those who have been following my books, you'll immediately recognize San Carlos de Bariloche as the epicenter for all sorts of post-war Nazi mischief, fusion projects for Juan Perón, estancias, ranches for Dolph and other high-ranking murderous malcontents, and just over the Andes in roughly the same southern regions of Chile, around Parral, if you've been paying attention, the Nestorius Colonia Dignidad, training center for Pinochet's intelligence forces, infamous Nazi compound, and secret manufacturer of chemical weapons, little things like sarin gas and other WMDs. It's a vacation wonderland for former Regia Marina, Kriegsmarine, and other Imperial Japanese Navy sorts, among many, many others. Even the Grand Master of the Italian Loga Propaganda du Licio Gelli managed to make his way to the place after the Italian government shut him down. Well, we know the region for its Bavarian-style chalets and hotel, which used to be a plastic surgery clinic. Gee, Joseph says, I wonder why. And for its annual anniversary celebrations, among many other such places in South America. But we've heard all the stories of the villages where Indian parents in the surrounding countryside are bearing children with blonde hair and blue eyes. And why, oh, why, oh, why is the President of the United States, at the end of a South American visit to Argentina, why is he going there?" Well, if you go to othersideofmidnight.com, which is our homepage, of course, and you click on the upper right-hand corner, that takes you to Radio with Pictures. That's our guest page for tonight. And on that guest page, you'll find that item. That's item number two, the interesting blog from Joe Farrell the other afternoon. Item number one is titled "Donald Trumpter Trickster God." And I found it on a website called The Baffler, and it's an extraordinarily interesting analysis of Trump and his impact on the American political system, viewed through the perspective that he seems to be the reincarnation — this, of course, is not serious, this is all metaphorical — or the realignment or reappearance or reemergence or whatever you want to read it, of Loki, the trickster god in Norse mythology, right out of the Marvel Comics universe, brother of Thor, son of Odin, etc., etc. Well, as I said some time ago, several months ago, when all this with Trump started, he was on a helicopter, I think, at the Iowa Fair sometime in July, maybe August, and one little kid that they were taking to the fair actually asked him, "Are you Batman?" Because apparently, guys who fly in with big helicopters with their names on them kind of reminded the individual of Bruce Wayne. And instead of saying, Trump said, "Yes, I'm Batman." We are living in a Batman universe. We're living in a Marvel universe. My guest this morning has been very well equipped over the last couple of decades to deal with this, as a few of us have tried to do. So let me give you some background, and then we will swing into our conversation. This is directly from David. He says, "I was born in Leicester, England on April 29th, 1952. I daydreamed my way through school, never took a major exam, and left to be a professional soccer player at the age of 15. I played most of my career with what was later diagnosed as rheumatoid arthritis, and my final season was a daily agony before my career literally ended overnight when I was just turning 21. A series of amazing synchronicities, you know, the stuff we talk about on this show, On the Other Side of Midnight, anyway, which I described in my books, David says, led to my becoming a newspaper, radio, and television journalist, a sports presenter with the BBC, and a national spokesman for the British Green Party. These experiences helped me to realize what an irrelevance the mainstream media and politics are at informing the public what is really going on in the world. I have now written around 20 books and traveled to about 50 countries researching and talking at public events, and as the world takes over more blatantly the form that I described in earlier books, the interest in my work has only exploded. I hope that I have shown people that no matter how bad and hopeless things may look, you can survive and even prosper if you are prepared to keep walking in your chosen direction and never give up. My words are designed to inspire all of us to be who we really are, to fling open the door of the mental prison we build for ourselves, and to walk into the light of freedom. David, welcome to The Other Side of Midnight.
Thank you, Richard.
Well, where in the heck do we begin? Should we pick up our conversation at lunch at the Hilton about 20 years ago? Because
yeah.
a few things have happened since then to kind of rearrange the landscape. Everybody either is familiar with your work or they definitely should be, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the past. I want to look at the future. Elections are supposed to be about the future, and we are looking at one in this country. Obviously, you've taken a couple of looks at what's going on here. David, what kind of alternate reality have we fallen into, and can we actually get out? Is there a way out of this hall of mirrors?
Well, the reason that, you know, we were talking a long time ago and now still talking again is because the great period in between and ongoing is necessary to unpick this fake tapestry that we call human life. And there are so many aspects to it. Everything from, you know, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton in the five-sense world of presidential election campaigns, right across to the fact that, as I contend, we live in a quantum computer universe, the equivalent of a vastly, vastly advanced computer game, in effect, which we're interacting with. So when you put those two situations together, between them is this vast tapestry of interconnected information. And it's only when the dots are connected clearly that you see the picture. And most people live their lives because of the way the manipulation of perception goes, the perception deception, as I call it. They live in a realm of pixels. They see pixels. They see this pixel. Oh, Hillary Clinton's going for president. This pixel. Oh, what's happening here with this bank? But when you connect them, the pixels become a picture. And from that picture, so many things can be understood that can never be understood in pixel awareness. So when you were talking earlier, Richard, about Obama's trip, well, that for me is a little glimpse into the nature of the dynamic between politicians, be they Trump or Clinton or Cruz or anybody, and the hidden power. Because we see the puppets, we see the oil rags, not the engineers of global events. And thus, we had George Bush, who seemed to be a certain polarity in politics. He's a Republican and the neocons and all that. And then someone else comes in called Obama. In the history of global politics, no one could ever have claimed to stand for something different based on the word constantly mantrad of change than George Bush. And yet, Obama has continued the theme, the direction that George Bush fronted up in the same way that now Obama's fronted up. So you take away the rhetoric, you take away the manufactured image, Bush is this, Obama is that, and then you see the common themes. And the common themes, which include the fact that a list of countries for regime change were listed by the neocon group Project for the New American Century in September 2000. They came to power with Bush and they started picking off those countries like Iraq, etc. But then Mr. Change comes in and continues that list into Libya, into Syria, etc. So there's a hidden hand here by anyone with half a brain cell on active duty. There's a force here which transcends these people. And part of that force takes the form of what have become known as Nazis, because we think of Nazis in Germany, but they were manifesting in Germany and expressing themselves in Germany through what happened there. But the connections between people like the Rockefeller family and so on, and Hitler's race purity movement in Germany, including funding people like Ernst Rudin, his race purity expert, that is also Nazi in the sense of the mentality, the agenda, the desires for the world. So because they manifested so obviously in Germany, we perceive Nazis as jackboots and marching legs in the air and all the rest of it. But actually, they were an expression of the mentality, the hidden hand which was given the name Nazi. But the same mentality exists in America, in Britain, all over the place. And so this, I think, very, very symbolic trip by Obama towards the end of his presidency, it's actually just almost showing you this is where the hidden hand is. And Obama has never been president of the United States, and nor was George Bush. They were just people who had that title. The real power was behind. And whoever comes in,
well, David,
Trump or Clinton,
David,
they will be controlled by the same hidden hand.
Have we had a president since John Kennedy? Really?
No, and this is a point that people said to me a long time ago, Richard, when there'd be a presidential election, and they'd say, is the president involved? And my answer was, is he the president? Because when you look at what it takes to become president, the vast amount of money, extraordinary amounts of money, and the fact that you have to have the media on your side, because if you don't, anyone that gets to the level of the greasy pole to run for president has got, as I said about Bill Clinton, he's not got skeletons in the cupboard. He's got whole cemeteries.
So very good.
So, am I talking about Hillary Clinton as well? Of course. And if what came out about her and what came out about these other people, they'd never run for president. So you have to have the media on your side. And of course, because of this web, which connects into all areas of human society, the web that controls the money also controls the media. So this web can make you president. And for me, the idea that...
Well, wait a minute, David. You know, that used to be kind of old thinking, but Bush spent something like $140 million, and he got 4 delegates, and then he quit. The guy who spent no money, who has himself more money than God, who represents the upper tenth, the 1% of 1% of the oligarchs, he's running his own campaign, ostensibly taking orders from no one, ostensibly barking in all kinds of directions, ostensibly calling on the worst of humankind, and he's leading in every poll. how do you square that model with your it's all definitely a plan?
Well,
how do you get so many people to just randomly decide, I'm going to bet on Trump because nothing else has worked, I'm at the end of my rope, it's better to go over the cliff with him than to keep doing the same stuff which is killing me?
First of all, Jeb Bush was an appalling candidate.
Really?
So, yeah, appalling candidate. So
I mean, he's asked the first question you know he's going to be asked, what'd you think of your brother's big incursion in Iraq? And it takes him 5 days and three tries to get the, quote, correct answer.
Yeah, and so
is this inbreeding, David? Is this really we're kind of seeing the inner workings? There's no there as what's her name used to say, the novelist, Gertrude Stein.
Well, I mean, look at George Bush. George Bush ran for president, had two terms as president of the United States, and you know, I mean, could he tie his shoelaces? I'm not sure. I mean, that was something that actually did put in front of your face the fact that here was a man called President of the United States, who clearly, I mean, Dick Cheney was the president.
Was the president, of course.
In terms of Donald Trump, first of all, when you're looking at elections and who's being put forward, you also have to look, and these people do in great detail, at the current mentality of people. Now, what has happened in terms of Obama, to get him in for two terms on the whole idea of change, I stand for change, I'm different, was fine because it got him in. But there is it has also created, Richard, a collective sea change in vast numbers of people, because I was in America a lot during the election campaign of Obama, the first one running up to his election. And I actually spoke in some places there saying this man is a fraud. I wrote an article called, Barack Obama, the Naked Emperor, pointing out that all this stuff was a front and he would just turn out to be the same as everyone else. But you could hardly say that in those days. There was this, oh no, honestly, mate, this is, I remember talking to a talk show host who said to me, I bet you you're wrong about Obama. I said, look, mate, I bet you anything you like. And I said to him, I don't want to take your money because it's obvious. So what has happened in response to this Obama change that's turned out to be nothing of the sort? There has been, I think.
Well, David, I wouldn't. It like you know, in that movie that you know the one with what's his name, Bill Will Smith. It's not exactly correct. There have been some interesting changes, really fundamental changes under Obama, but they've been hidden by all the things that haven't changed that appear to be a continuation, a continuity, as you said, of George Bush. But if you start looking deep in the weeds, you see some really significant changes, like, I'll give you a big one. We did not invade Syria and take away their chemical weapons. Obama somehow, between Kerry and Biden and Obama and Putin, they negotiated a way to get those weapons out of Assad's hands without firing a shot. That's not like George Bush. In fact, all the people who freaked out that, you know, Obama wasn't being president, he wasn't throwing our weight around, don't look at this in terms of the incredible success that it was, that we got the weapons out. A lot of people that would have died when Assad uses them will not die now. The world is a little safer in that part of the world, a little, tiny bit, and we didn't have to commit American ground troops, no more, you know, sons and daughters of Americans dying over things that are so stupid they're not even worthy of discussion. That was a change over George Bush, who would have gone in with the, you know, 10th Mountain Division, and that would have been another chapter in American history, which is not very nice.
Well, you can talk about detail here and detail there.
Yeah, but details are important. Details are what you make a tapestry of.
But the details are obviously going to, the fine details are obviously going to change here and there. But the theme is what I'm talking about. And if Obama wanted to end the Syrian conflict, he could do. He could get into negotiations with people like Putin. He could get into negotiations with people like Assad, and he could bring an end to it. And he could stop funding, arming, and training people who then are called terrorists, who are said to be something that is a vast danger to the world. If that had been done, Europe would not now be being subject to the vast influx of people from the Middle East, many of them fleeing these very wars. And you know, when you look at the themes of Bush have continued. But the point about what I was saying earlier is that the perception is much more, I would say, than before, after the Obama experience of I'm standing for change and the things go on basically the same, that what's the point? They're all the same. That what's the, as you know, as people have said to me in America, what's the point in voting because the government still gets in? and so people are much more open now.
That's like the right-wingers who a few years ago were demanding that Obama not touch their Medicaid. No more government programs. Don't touch my Medicaid.
But they're much more open now to someone who appears to be a renegade, who appears to be outside of the system.
Well, see, I would almost argue that if you were thinking four-dimensional conspiracies, which, of course, is what we're going to talk about tonight, that this is all part of a plan to coincide with a major change in this background physics I talk about all the time, which leads to a momentary window in consciousness where the good folks, you know, the good are getting better and the bad are getting worse, the good folks look around, recognize their goodness and those of their compatriots, and make a collective decision to vote in favor of positive change as opposed to negative and fear and fear porn and the deadly spiral we seem to be stuck in, certainly in certain quarters.
Well, yes, but that's also very dangerous, as well as potentially positive, because it depends when you are looking around for something to support in relation to what you've just said. It's dangerous if you pick the wrong horse.
Mm.
And it's even more dangerous if that which is has created a situation of ongoing presidents who follow basically the same theme, have turned you into a cynic, have turned you into what's the point in voting for these people, they're all the same, who then, having turned you into that, then offer you the alternative. You've got to be very, very careful, because these people are extremely sick, deeply psychopathic, but they're not, from an intellectual point of view, stupid. They absolutely know, not least through vast amounts of accumulated knowledge and experience, how to manipulate human perception, because that's what it all is in the end.
Well, but there is one candidate in the field we know is not captive and held captive by them, because his money is not coming from them. His money is coming from 5 million ordinary folks, average contribution between 27 and 35 bucks. He's got a bottomless well of money because he's going to people who aren't maxed out. More people are joining every day. A guy who's maintained the same principles for his entire political career since he was mayor of a little tiny town in Vermont, which is one of our states over here. This guy is named Bernie Sanders, and he's saying all the things, David, that you and I have been saying, but he's saying it to where people actually are listening. They realize they're being lied to in every imaginable way, and each day he brings up another laundry list of more lies. And it's almost like, I mean, I've argued on the show in weeks and months previous, it's almost like that the human condition, the human race, is now being presented through the window of the American electorate, because the Americans control the planet, more or less. And our choice now is incredibly clear. We have a guy who's going to win on the Republican side because he's playing to everybody's most horrible fears and racist prejudices and things they never would speak about in daylight, let alone on the other side of midnight. And then we got a guy who basically is trying to appeal to the best of humanity and talk about how we are responsible for other people, our brothers, our sisters, how things can work, how we don't have to always live in fear. We don't have to have foreign incursions and adventurism and the new American century folks telling us what country to invade next. In other words, never has the choice in the American political system, in my lifetime, David, and you're about the same age as I am, never has it been more clear within the strictures of conventional mainstream thinking. We have stunning choices now in front of us.
What I was talking about, or who I was talking about, when I was saying what I did a few minutes ago, was not Bernie Sanders. It was Donald Trump.
Of course.
Donald Trump is being offered as a renegade against the system when you don't become a billionaire unless the financial system is quite happy with that.
Now, don't you find it interesting, though, that the people who are so upset at the system, they don't look at Donald as a product of the system. They look at him as someone who kind of magically descended from a cloud.
Exactly.
And I mean, I have people very close to me who are going to support Trump. And I point out, delicately, all the inconsistencies, the outright lies, the prevarications, the lack of any there, you know, quoting Gertrude Stein again, and they don't care. They are so angry and frustrated and fed up and at their wit's ends almost existentially in terms of where we're going, that they're willing to bet on this horse who appears out of nowhere, even though we all know him. We really don't know anything about him and how he got his money. I mean, there have been a couple of documentaries, but they're very superficial. You don't get in New York City to make billions of dollars unless you pay off the right people, period. So why are these people willing to bet on Donald as opposed to the rest of the whole political system? To me, that's telling us that we're reaching some crescendo at the level of consciousness itself.
Yeah, well, in the end, Richard, everything is an expression of consciousness. And when I talk about the perception deception, what they're doing is manipulating, engineering, and downloading a perception in consciousness. That's what it's all about. But what I was saying earlier, the way the trick works is that you go down your road of Republican-Democrat convention. And then when people get sick of that, not least because of I'm about change didn't turn out to be very much, then you give them the alternative that they're looking for something else. So along comes Donald Trump. But in terms of Bernie Sanders, I've been charting statements by Bernie Sanders for a long time, not least because he stood out magnificently after the 2008 economic crash.
Oh, the debacle. Hold it there, because we have a break at the bottom of the hour.
Okay.
And it's a special break tonight. It's by a guy named Gareth Ike. He's a singer, something. The name sounds familiar.
Yeah, I kind of know him
somehow.
Anyway,
I thought you might. This is your son. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return.
Light is breaking through the cracks, but darkness wants to drag you back. Who dictates all the stakes? So while this light's right down through paper rounds, I eat but I can't hold it down. My stomach knots, it tells out a rock.
And we are back on the other side of midnight. Patrick, there in Georgia, it is 60 degrees, 60 tetrahedral degrees in the land of enchantment tonight, so warm weather is headed your way. Okay, I'm back with David Ike. David, let's say a couple of words about your son, because in the break you were telling me something about this very talented musician. I'd asked M earlier, you know, if we could have links to his record company and websites and all that. And the information came back, well, there is no link because, and then, why don't you pick up the story? Why is there not a link? What did Gareth do that one should not do if one wants to be an up-and-coming rock star, but is such a shining example of how to be a person?
Yeah, well, Gareth has a website, GarethIke.com, but good. Of course he runs it himself. What he doesn't have is a record company and has never had a record deal. He was approached at one point some years ago now and offered a lot of money by someone connected, I think, to the City of London to advance his career. But the reason that it would happen was if he denounced me and what I was saying and distanced himself from me, which is quite an ask for the son of somebody. And of course, Gareth, being in integrity, refused to do it, turned the money down, and it's never been offered again. But you know, this is a very important area. If we are going to demand integrity from people in politics, we have to come from a point of integrity ourselves. Indeed, that point of integrity will decide what we support in politics. And so when you come around to Bernie Sanders, as we were talking about before the break, I've been watching Bernie Sanders for a long time simply because here was a man who was saying something different to the crowd on Capitol Hill. He was the one that was denouncing and exposing the bankers after 2008. He was the one pointing out the incredible situation with regard to paying tax and major corporations in America, the same situation we have in this country. And when you look at his history, as you just pointed out, there is a consistency. And, of course, he is against Hillary Clinton, I would call her evil, except that evil would probably sue for defamation of character, to be honest. So he is big time against the system there. And this idea that you can have so-called superdelegates that can go against the wishes of the caucuses and vote for who they choose because they choose, it's a built-in rigged system against people like Bernie Sanders. And, of course, so people tell me, certainly a few months ago they were telling me in America that Sanders was playing to vast audiences, speaking to vast audiences, but this was not reported in the media because they didn't want this wave of momentum to pick up. So you are dealing with someone who is challenging the system. I mean, there's things that that Bernie says I don't agree with. I don't agree with his support for human-caused climate change, for instance. But you're never going to get anyone you're going to agree with everything on. The point is, are they coming from a point of integrity? Mm. Quite simply, do they mean what they say, or are they saying it for effect to get the outcome that they want, which, of course, is what the Clintons of this world do. You know, what audience is it? What do they want to hear? Okay, give me that speech. And that's how it goes on. And I think it's one of the saddest things, Richard, observing the election campaign, is the support that she's getting from so many in black Americans.
Well, I think I have an explanation for that.
She couldn't give a damn about black Americans.
But you have to look at the history. Remember, Bill was the first black president. You know, that's basically, you know, Madison Avenue. What was it? Vance Packard who did that first book on Madison Avenue? Incredible book. Anyway, what Hillary's doing is selling prepackaged stuff to an audience which basically has been set up to accept it.
Yeah.
And a lot of her support is coming from more than middle-aged black women in the South. Now, why is that significant? Because to a middle-aged or older black woman, Bernie Sanders saying he's a socialist is like saying he's Lucifer. So yeah. I think that it's not a vote for Hillary. It's a vote against the devil they don't know because he hasn't spent enough time and money, and there was no time to do it, in the South educating these older people that, in fact, he's not who they think he is in terms of labels. He is Bernie Sanders to me, and this is going to probably shock you. He's like an Eisen-Nixon-hour Republican.
Well, what we're dealing with, you mentioned Madison Avenue there. What we're dealing with, and what you've just described, is the perception deception. This is where it all works. This is the level that the whole manipulation and conspiracy works. How can we manipulate people to see the world the way that suits us? And what's happening in terms of Hillary Clinton, of course, in the area that we're talking about, is a classic example, as it is in the reverse, in terms of the perception of Bernie Sanders. And if you can, because words are very important, if you can create buzzwords that seem to be positive, this is why all this technology has smart in front of it, and all these other changes in society have smart in front of them. And what they've done, what you can also do, of course, is demonize a word, and you can demonize the word so the very hearing of it creates an emotional response. And things like socialist and socialism have had that done to them because they've been given certain connotations because of certain people who've used them about what they were wanting to do, who have been appalling expressions of humanity. So you can demonize words. And what I would say to people, I think this is so absolutely vital, the disconnection from what I call the program, which starts when you leave the womb and goes on through life. And the program is programming, it's uploading to you perceptions of life, self, everything, the world, that suits that which is controlling the program. So when people are thinking something, when they say, this is my view, it's a very good idea just to sit down and say, well, hold on, let me chart this back. Where does this view actually come from? What's its origin? And when you do that, invariably, if you haven't done your own independent research, there will be some aspect of the system from which that has come. It may have come from the education system that you went through. It may come from the media. It may come from your peers. It may come from anywhere in the system. The question is, where does it come from? And who says that? And how do you know that? And when you break it down and you take back a view to its origin, invariably, it's not your view at all. It's something you picked up from someone or something on the journey called life. And This is the whole thing, I think, that we need to be aware of, is how programmed people are in terms of their views. Because if you think about it, you come out of the womb, you're immediately then affected in terms of your perceptions by parents who've been through this system themselves. They're not trying to cause you damage knowingly. They want the best for you, most of them, but they are passing on their programmed perception of everything to you. Now, in the ridiculously short time after you enter this world, you're at a desk where some authority figure is telling you when you have to be there, when you can leave, when you can eat, when you can talk, or all the rest of it. This goes on through your entire formative years into your teenage years, where at least 5 days a week, the system's version of everything is telling you what is real, what is not real, what is possible, what is impossible, what is, what isn't. And then at the end of that, you go out into your profession, be it politics, law, journalism, science, doctor, whatever it is, and you take that base programming if you're not aware enough and open enough to challenge it and question it. And therefore, that program becomes your sense of everything. And so these different aspects of this base program then support each other in terms of their perceptions and the way things should happen based on that base program. So if a journalist wants to do a story about medicine, he won't go to somebody outside the system who spent decades researching things beyond Big Pharma. He'll go to a doctor. If he wants to know about reality, he won't come to you or someone like me. He'll go to a scientist in the system, because this base program has grabbed them by the this is how it is. this is the word, this is the norm. And the, you know, when you are outside the norm, and in his own way, in terms of American politics, Bernie Sanders is outside the norm for vast numbers of people in their perceptions. When you're outside the norm, you are not normal. And so we say, what is normal? Well, normal is perceived to be sane. But what normal is like everyone else. Normal is merely what people have normally experienced and what they've normally perceived. But when you think that the education system, the media, peer pressure, etc., are constantly confirming this base program, this is how it is, this is how life is, this is what you are, this is what is possible in the world, that norm actually is simply the programmed version of normality. And this is the resistance point that you get when anyone, whether it's in your field or my field or anyone's field outside the norm, this is where you get the resistance from by reflex action, because the program keeps going back to default position, default position, default position. And what's fantastic now is the number of people, particularly young people, not the majority by any means, but great numbers, more than when I started out 25 years ago on this journey, who are beginning to question the norm. They're beginning to look at things and say, hold on, this is not how I thought it was. This is not how I've been told it was. And when I look back 25 years to when I started out, anyway, you've got your own experiences. It's dreamland now in terms of the number of people who are open to look outside of these norms beyond this program as it was all those years ago. So that we are making progress, but we're not making progress because of politicians and because of expressions of the system. We're making progress because, in my view, there is undoubtedly a bursting of the bubble of the program going on in enormous and gathering numbers of people where they are expanding their sense of the possible. That's the point. Big, big, big important point. They're expanding their sense of the possible so they can look at other possibilities and not just the norm's possibility. And that's a very important point for this reason. I've been saying for years, a massive, massive part of this perception program, collective perception program, is dictating a sense of the possible. Because if you can program a sense of the possible and make it as small as you can get away with, then anyone that comes outside of that sense of the possible is immediately dismissed as a nutter or ridiculous or crazy or don't talk rubbish, because the sense of the possible thus downloaded simply can't get its head around it. It cannot process that information into a form that it can see as credible. It's like if my computer in front of me now is programmed to firewall out certain information inputs, then I can bash this keyboard, I can bash this mouse for as long as I like, but this computer is not going to put that firewalled information on the screen. In other words, encompass it as part of its reality. It's not going to do that. So this control of the sense of the possible is absolutely crucial and fundamental to the program's survival. So like I say, when Bernie Sanders is coming along and saying things outside the norm, he's used the word socialist in American politics. Oh, my God. You know, I mean, call the police.
Yes, well, he's actually expanded it now to democratic socialist. Right. And what he's very cleverly doing is in every one of these speeches, again and again and again, he talks about the need for a political revolution. If you just say revolution, people freak out. But if you say political revolution, again, it kind of goes through the filters. David, if the system is so controlled, and remember, I was at CBS, you were at the BBC, we know how controlled networks were. How are all these people coming to an insight on both ends of this political spectrum, this fake 2D spectrum, left and right? How come we have this insurgence at the grassroots level from widely disparate points of view It's not working. It hasn't worked in a long time. For God's sake, I want a world that works, and I don't care what I have to do to get it. If I have to go to a socialist or I have to go to, you know, a carnival barker like Trump, anybody but what's going on now. How did all these people get infused if they've been programmed from birth to death, as you just described?
Well, because there comes a point where you can't see in your own experience how things are going to get better for you, and in terms of people who focus on America as a country, are going to get better for your country on the basis of the status quo. And that's why every now and again, this system has to change the status quo to give you another cul-de-sac, in this case, Donald Trump. And one of the things that's I've talked about for years is the manipulation of what we call hope. Because hope, for me, it makes us feel good, yes, but in the playing out, hope is always in the future. It's a bit like sitting on a carousel horse, and you hope you're going to catch the one in front. You're not, because it's not structured like that. And I think one of the things is, yeah, it's bad now, but we've got hope. I mean, Obama came in. He's going to change it. He's given us hope. And what hope can be used as, and it is by this manipulation, is a holding position. Give them hope, and they'll let us play out a little bit longer in the hope that things will get better. And then by the time they realize that they're not, then we'll give them something else to hope for. And I think people, in a large extent, are running out of hope in the sense of trusting the status quo as it's been up to this point, giving them anything in terms of I hope it will get better. People are not buying that anymore because their experience is it's not going anywhere. And so what you have to do then is give people an alternative, thinking that it's different. You see, I don't want to keep going on about Bush and Obama, but Bush went on these overseas wars, etc. And Obama came in and gave hope that that would end, hope that there was going to be another direction. And a lot of that hope and change, they were interchangeable words. The fact that he was going to change, I'm about change, was giving people hope that that change would take place. And I think people have run out of that now. And so they're looking for something else that's different. And like I say, that they've been given a mask on the same face in terms of Donald Trump, which large numbers of people are buying in desperation that someone's going to sort it out.
But
if I could just say this, Richard,
okay.
You know, we talk about a revolution of politics. For me, what we need desperately is a revolution of consciousness. Everything comes from consciousness. Mm. And if we can give things labels like political revolution and a financial revolution, but it comes in the end, the kind of revolution it is, comes from consciousness. You cannot have a revolution of politics without a revolution of consciousness, which changes politics. You can't have a revolution of finance unless you have a consciousness that sees what finance is and changes the nature of finance. It's all in the end about consciousness. And so what we have, as we go deeper in the rabbit hole, is we have a structure designed, and this is what this program's about, big time, through education, media, all the rest of it, designed to focus attention in basically the five senses at the expense of the greater consciousness, which gives you intuitive insight, intuitive knowing, inspiration to see through the lies and see between the lines. They want to focus people on this five-sense reality because once you that's where you are basically living all reality and you are manifesting all perception. Without that influence of your expanded awareness that can see beyond the program, then the only place you can look through your life to get an insight into what's going on in the world, an insight into your own life, an insight into life itself, is in the five senses. And what comes back to you from that world is the education system, the media, etc., etc. So the idea is, if you go really deep into this, is to create a structure and a perception deception program that focuses attention within the five senses. So it sees this tiny frequency range as basically all there is. And you disconnect them from the influence of their expanded awareness. And this is where transhumanism comes in, because the idea is to go beyond even that, what I call phantom self in the new book that's just come out.
That's what I was going to ask next. This new book, this phantom self, is this kind of the distillation of your last 25, 26 years of figuring this out?
Well, the last one was really that. It was called The Perception Deception, and it's a massive work. What I've done with this one, Richard, Phantom Self, is to look, at one level anyway, why people see the world as they do, why they think the way they do, why they have the emotional responses they do in relation to this control system, this program. What I term phantom self is basically what I've just described. It's complete self-identity with your name, your family history, your race, your country, your background, your income bracket, etc., to the point where you think that those labels are what you are. From my point of view, those labels are what you are experiencing. What you are is pure awareness. Forget form, forget race, forget the way form manifests itself gets us to believe that form is all kind of real. Just think awareness, a state of being aware. And the question then is, how aware is that state of awareness? If it comes from an expanded state of awareness where it realizes it's a state of awareness having an experience, then the spectrum, the scale of consciousness that it's going to access and thus get inspiration and insight from is going to be vast compared with a state of awareness that is perceiving only through the five senses and perceiving as reality only the five-sense world. And what one of the chapters in Phantom Self is called Transphantomism. And what I mean by that, obviously related to transhumanism, is that this next stage is to take that disconnection from five-sense experiencing self, disconnected from infinite awareness, and take it to a whole new level by putting technology inside the body, what I call the biological computer, and connecting that technology, not least nanotechnology, to what people like Ray Kurzweil call the cloud, what I've been writing about for years and calling it the technologically created sub-reality, and basically replace infinite awareness in terms of an impact upon five sense experiencing self with this technologically created cloud. And they're actually putting it in our faces now. I mean, here's a quote from Ray Kurzweil, this Google executive, this promotion man, this PR man for Frankenstein. Our thinking will be a hybrid of biological and non-biological thinking. Humans will be able to extend their limitations and think in the cloud. We're going to put gateways to the cloud in our brains. We're going to gradually merge and enhance ourselves. In my view, he says, that's the nature of being human. We transcend our limitations. And how they're selling this is it's going to make us superhuman. No, it's not. It's going to make us subhuman. It's going to make us computer terminals on a technologically created human internet. And that's where this is going. And what we're seeing, and again, it's the perception deception, and it's also something that I've been calling for years the totalitarian tiptoe, where you go to your goal in steps, trying to hide the fact that each step is connected to another. So we've now had this situation where people in very large numbers, vast numbers have become addicted to technology. I mean, it's just extraordinary. You know, I think we're looking at a biological mutation that will eventually have babies coming out of the womb taking selfies. Right? That's where we're going, right?
That is so cool and true. God, someone should do a film on this because I can see, you know, forget Corwin. I mean, this is really horrifying because once you have this implanted, if there's no off switch, and how do you know there's an off switch, you suddenly become controlled by the cloud.
Exactly. And Kurzweil's telling you that.
Talk about the Walking Dead or the zombie apocalypse or any of that's what the I've been trying to figure out. What are these movies trying to warn us about? And that's what they're trying to warn us about people who voluntarily, technologically connect themselves. Who was one of those British guys a few years ago who actually had something implanted to control his thumbs or his fingers or something?
Oh, that's Kevin Warwick at Reading University, yes.
Yeah, one of your countrymen.
Oh,
Brave New World.
Any connection between Kevin Warwick and a state of consciousness is purely coincidental, I'll tell you that.
No, don't sink to Donald Trump's level. We don't do that here. Okay.
But this guy is selling this idea as a great step forward.
We used to call those folks Judas goats. Remember that? Okay. Tell you what, hold it there,
yes.
David. We have another break here at the top of the hour. We, in fact, actually have another break from Gareth. And I... Fine, folks. It is Twice, 19.5. You're on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning is David Icke. This is David's son, Gareth, entertaining us at the top of the hour. We shall return.
It's only worth as much as how you are. That you love.
Okay, we are back. We are back on the other side of midnight. Breaking news, folks. We just got a flash from Belgium. Apparently, there were two explosions in Brussels within the last few minutes. There have been reported casualties. They've shut the airport. There's smoke rising from one of the terminals at the terminal building. And as I said a moment ago, there are casualties. David, are you with us?
I am, yeah.
This is what you were talking about in the abstract. This is now, you know, this is like Kristallnacht. Every time there appears to be a potential for a consciousness change, we're zapped back into fear mode, fear porn, through something like this. How do we break this cycle, David? How do we get out of the trap?
Well, obviously, I'm just looking at the story now for the first time. We don't know exactly the background, but we can look at what has already happened in terms of terrorist attacks in various and many places. And what when you know what the agenda is and the means to get there, not least what I've called for a long time problem, reaction, solution, create the problem, get the reaction, do something, then offer the solutions to the problems you've created, which is to change society in the form that you want.
Yeah, you know, the standard Hegelian dialect.
Yeah, well, what has happened after all of these situations, whether it's in Paris, whether it's been one anywhere, then the solution has come, and that solution has mirrored what this agenda is for more and more control, more and more police state, more and more surveillance, more and more limitation of human activity. And we are in a situation now where they're upping the ante. They are seeking to bombard people with states of fear, which is a very low frequency state of being, to pull people more and more into this five sense reality of fear so that we will respond. Because once you get someone in a state of fear, they will look for something or someone to protect them from what they fear. So the manipulation of fear is absolutely the bottom line of all this. It's one of the greatest perception deception is to put people in states of fear. So as people awaken and look into this world from another level of perception, they're in this world, quote, physically, but they're not of this world in terms of their entire perception of reality. They have the ability to look into this world in terms of their perceptions and their insights and see it for what it is. If you're in this world and of it, which is what Five Sense Phantom Self Creation is all about, then these things will terrify you. You'll be terrified to get on a plane. You'll be terrified to let your children out. And that's exactly the state they want. Mm. Once you expand your awareness, you're now looking at, going back to what we talked about earlier, you're now looking at the picture and not the pixels. And while we can be filled with horror at what's before us, because we have a wider perception of why it's taken place, that we don't get pulled in to the fear of accepting solutions on the basis of being protected from what we fear. And this is, I don't know what your experience is, Richard, but certainly mine, as I've observed this, more and more people are not getting pulled in by this stuff. Of course, the vast majority are still, but many, many people aren't. And these what they call false flag events or problem reaction solution events are getting more difficult to sell to more people because people are starting to see it.
And the very term false flag has made it into the mainstream. See, we can look at this either we're an isolated physical set of systems, biochemistry and all that, and we're functioning according to problems, reactions, stimulus, response, all that.
Yeah.
Or well, there's much more to us, David. That's what I'm getting at before. And in our model, the reason people are waking up, the reason people are fomenting for real change on both sides of the classic aisle is because consciousness itself is being raised. The physics, the background physics that I have been running around the world while you've been giving speeches, I've been monitoring ancient sacred sites with Robin and using technology that can actually demonstrate that a pile of limestone in the form of a pyramid amplifies to an extraordinary degree the background physics. So consciousness takes place in a different way in that environment than it does normally. But as the background itself is now being changed, is being raised, again, according to our work and some others, the fact that we're seeing this incredible luminescence of consciousness, even in terms of the dark side, people wanting to reach out and make something happen differently, people acting on their fears and their hopes. That, to me, is the incredible polarization we're seeing enhanced by the changes. And it's almost like the Trump phenomenon, if you really want to be conspiratorial, I could provide some evidence tonight. The Trump is not an accident. He is the end product of a set different, special set of conscious decisions designed to build into the electorate this foment, this demand for real change, this absolute frustration with the fake change they were sold 8 years ago. And now on both sides, people are willing to do what they're never willing to do, which is to risk themselves because change is preferable to continuing the status quo.
Well, it's funny you should say that, and you talk about background energy change, because I don't know whether you know, but when I was minding my own business,
when was that ever? When did you ever do that?
I was minding my own business, introducing the sport on the BBC and doing things like, you know, reading news and stuff. And I was a national spokesman for the Green Party, and you know, getting a lot of insight, which has been so helpful since. But what happened was I had a situation where for a year. Up to actually, funnily enough, 26 years ago, on the 31st of March, 31st of this month, I had gone for a year up to that point, and I was just doing the normal things I've just described. But when I was in a room alone, I felt I wasn't alone, and this got more and more powerful. as this year unfolded, to the point where, through a series of synchronicities, I ended up in a psychic's front room in southern England. I never met a psychic before in my life. And this lady, to my astonishment, starts telling me that she's being told to tell me that I'm going to go out on a world stage and reveal great secrets and all the stuff that's gone since. And the reason I tell that story in relation to what you just said is that I was told at that time through this psychic and one other that what was happening was there was a vibrational change starting to emerge that was going to act like a spiritual alarm clock. And the first book I wrote on this subject is in front of me now. I called The Truth Vibrations. It was the first book I wrote after my initial awakening, because awakening's a process ongoing. And I called it The Truth Vibrations because what I was told was this vibrational change was going to, first of all, and wait for this, 26 years later, was going to bring to the surface all that had been hidden so people could see it.
Oh, my. Well, that's the definition of the apocalypse. It's not a disaster. It's an enlightenment.
Yeah, and the other thing that I was told was it was going to act, like I say, like a spiritual alarm clock, and it was going to awaken people from their coma. And that the people that were more awake were going to be affected first, and eventually people who at that time were solid gold asleep in the coma, they were going to start being affected. Now, when I look, Richard, 26 years ago, as you will, there was no evidence of that at the time.
No,
but
no.
Look at it now. Look at it now. And what encourages me, you indicated you found the same, is it's not just the numbers of people who are beginning to reassess life and everything they've been told. It's the kind of people. It's people in the system who are starting to say, hold on a minute, what's going on? Because of compartmentalization, of course, most people are in the system contributing to the ends of the system without realizing even there is a system, let alone that it has an end. So what you are saying there, I didn't realize you were saying that, but what you're saying about this change in background energy is absolutely in line with what I was told 26 years ago this month, and what the human experience since, especially now, has shown to be happening.
See, if I can use an analogy from the West Coast of the U.S., you can't surf if surf's not up. The surf is now up. You know, my classic cliche is the good are getting better and the bad are getting worse. It's like, did you ever see that movie with, what's his name? Oh, I always forget. It's called Liar, Liar. James,
yeah.
I can see. Jim Carrey, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what's going on. The physics seems to be impelling people against their better judgment to blurt out the truth. Over and over again, I'm watching the political world going bonkers over this. You know, a guy named Trump comes along. He's just, it's so stream of consciousness. You can follow what's going on, and he's darting from this idea to that idea. But it's like he's the quintessence representative of this unfolding stream of consciousness. I'm not part of the system. I'm something else. And I'm just wondering out loud, David, if we're not part of the most incredibly sophisticated psyops campaign planned through George Bush, Barack Obama, and now coming up to Trump, to create a context where all those people who are asleep from the neck up, they finally are waking up because it's so in their face they cannot wake up. But what no one is counting on is in their awakening, they're not going to stay static. In other words, they may be Trump supporters today, but 3 weeks from now, are they going to be looking at Bernie? There's such a crossover between Bernie and Trump. It almost seems like at first Trump is kind of like the doorway. Oh, it doesn't have to be like this. Then the next doorway is, wait a minute, maybe it can be something really different and really structured so people win. People win, not the oligarchs. And so they're migrating. It's like this flux of consciousness roiling around looking for how it can work.
Well, it's like I said earlier, I had an initial awakening, actually a massive one, really, in 1990. But it wasn't that I awakened. It was that I began the process of awakening.
Ah.
And because anyone thinks you awaken, and well, I mean, it's an ongoing process. And what is that process? It's deprogramming. You know, people talk about seeking enlightenment. We do not have to seek enlightenment. That's a mug's game, because all you do is seek it, you never find it. Seeking enlightenment is trying to seek something you already are. We are already enlightened. We are already infinite awareness. What's keeping us from the impact of that is the layers and layers of programming from cradle to grave to stop us being influenced by that. So it's deprogramming. So in the way you've described, well, you can see it in many ways, but you can see that once the some layers of the program come off, you reject the two-party system as it's been up to now. When the next layer comes off, then you start to reject what you've suddenly encompassed as a reaction against the conventional system. And then you move on, and eventually you see that the whole political system is a waste of space, and we need to have a completely new way of living our lives and doing things. So it is a process. I mean, I have people now who dismissed me and laughed at me in the street, well, most people did, 26 years ago, who then said, oh, yeah, well, okay, yeah, well, what you're saying about the manipulation of politics, that makes sense, but all that other stuff, oh, no, mate, load of rubbish. Now they're encompassing that because the layers are coming off, and the layers of what? The layers of their sense of the possible. And it doesn't mean you believe everything people say. Of course not. You don't. But what you do is you give it a chance to present itself. You don't dismiss it by reflex action like 5 cents people do. So there is this process of awakening. There's no doubt about it. But there's also, and this is what we have to be careful about, we mentioned this earlier, is there's also an effort within this system and that which is behind it to find new cul-de-sacs for this. You know,
well, remember, you can only hook people in your deception model if you somehow sprinkle in enough truth to catch them in resonance. There's got to be truth in there somewhere, otherwise they'll ignore you totally. So
exactly.
It's this skill.
I call it gin and tonic with a twist.
Exactly. Okay. So let's get to your worldwide wake up tour. I love the title. I notice you're going to be safely in Sydney on the other side of the planet from Cleveland when the Republican convention begins on July 16th. That was very clever programming.
Well, I didn't plan it that way, but I'm very grateful.
Having a whole planet between you and what's going to happen in Cleveland is probably a very good idea. So let's go through radio with pictures. You have a whole bunch of pictures up there of people. Some I recognize, some I don't. Let's just kind of go through and okay. See what you want people to take away, because this lives forever now. This is okay. In the archive in Club 19.5. So people can go back and listen to this and go and click on the links and look at details and all that. So where do you want to take us on this?
Well, first of all, in terms of the tour, it relates very much to what we've just been talking about and this awakening. Because, you know, when I first came to America in the late 90s, I was talking to a man and a dog when the dog could be bothered to turn up. You know, I did this event once near Chicago, and 8 people turned up. And now I'm talking in across America, Australia, and Europe this year, and there's going to be thousands at the events. So this is a massive confirmation that you know, people are now far more open to another version of events than they were before. In terms of the pictures, the picture "They Have No Shame," that's Stoltenberg, the head of NATO. And the point I'm making there, and these pictures can get across on things like social media, a thought very quickly and very simply, which I hope will stimulate people to look more deeply into the subject. But what's happened is, again, it's the perception deception. We have terrorism condemned, rightly, but this terrorism is condemned and acted upon by terrorists on a scale which the terrorists they're talking about could never match. I mean, but it's about perception. So you do a terrorist event, and that's a bad thing, must be condemned. What must we do about these terrorists? And then you justify protecting civilians in Libya by bombing them mercilessly from the air and devastating their cities. But that is not terrorism. That's fighting for peace. So this perception deception is absolutely crucial. It's getting people to see one thing in a certain way and another thing in another way when both are the same. In fact, one way is even worse. And this is what's happening all the time.
Okay, so let me interject. What was the real reason, by your analysis, of the dethroning of Gaddafi? Why do we suddenly have to get rid of Gaddafi?
Well, I think there are many more detailed reasons in maybe involved in finance, but what this system wants, and like I say, there are many levels to it. This is one. It wants chaos. I mean, the 33rd degree of Freemasonry, ordo ab chao, order out of chaos, is the motto. Order out of chaos. What's that? Problem, reaction, solution. Create the chaos, offer the order, your order out of the chaos.
And so, Rahm Emanuel, the current mayor of Chicago, former chief of staff to President Obama, he said, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Exactly. And even so you take that on, and if crises don't naturally come up, well, let's start one. And so what, for all his faults, Gaddafi represented, for instance, in Libya, and Assad represented in Syria, and Saddam Hussein represented in Iraq, for all their faults, they represented stability. Stability. What Gaddafi was doing was holding apart all these warring tribes who, once he went, I mean, look at it. It's catastrophe. You look at Iraq, it's a catastrophe. You look at Syria, it's a catastrophe. They've taken out these people who were holding for whatever, you know, we may criticize them for, and rightly.
Well, no, wait. You introduced an interesting pattern, and I agree with the pattern. But what's the exception to the pattern? Who did not take out Assad per the pattern?
Well, I think that...
Obama. Instead,
yes.
He did a deal with Putin, got the chemical weapons out, the civil war is still ongoing, the refugees are still fleeing, but we haven't created the nexus for World War III with nuclear weapons. Even when Putin put his Air Force in there, we were very, very careful, and now suddenly he's withdrawn. There are things going on behind the stage, David, that I think are bigger than what we are talking about so far, because like this trip that Obama's taking to Patagonia, to that extraordinarily weird place that has so much meaning for those of us that have looked beyond the edge of the paper to other space programs, secret space programs, breakaway civilizations that arose from the Nazi pyre in the 1940s, et cetera, et cetera. It's like what we're looking at, what we're forced to look at in the Trump thing and in, you know, this bombing now in Brussels, is all to keep our attention focused on the small stuff while the big stuff is going on and we haven't a clue.
Well, I mean, you can read Assad like that. I read it slightly differently. I read it that they wanted Assad out as quick as they got Gaddafi out. But Assad was a different kettle of fish in terms of doing that. And they've made every effort to remove him. And the ambassador who was the ambassador for the American ambassador to Syria, who was put in there in around 2011, who has massive history of creating coups and upheavals in countries he goes into. They put him in there, and very soon afterwards, the uprising, so-called Arab Spring, started. And indeed, he was then had to leave because people in Syria were pointing the fact that he'd started it. And from that has come all this catastrophe. I mean, when you look, don't matter whether it's Syria or Libya or Iraq, what has followed these interventions is absolute catastrophe for the people. And they wanted Assad gone, but he wouldn't go. And I think he would have gone now without the Russian intervention. Because he was really on his last legs in terms of defending against these people. And you have a situation where the so-called West was supposed to be putting the military in there, the Air Force, to fight ISIS, which is supposed to be this organization that was a danger to the civilization. And clearly they weren't trying. It was obvious they weren't trying. And then what Putin did by coming in and trying was showed what that they weren't trying. So there are many ways of looking at this. And if Obama had done things differently, things would have been different. Of course, things are going on in the background we don't know about. But on the things that we actually see, there is a clear pattern. And the only change in that pattern is they're not yet got rid of Assad. And then they're not going to be able to now without Putin's agreement because of his intervention. So, I think there are many ways of looking at things, but the patterns remain.
Okay, moving to those other stuff. You mentioned Ray Kurzweil. Ray Kurzweil actually has called us and wants to come on the show at some point, and he just wanted me to be fair, and he was very, very sensitive to the idea of discussing transhumanism. How did you get interested in it? Why don't you define it for the rest of us and then take it where it feeds back into your new book, The Phantom Self?
Well, it's clear to see the pattern that's going on. I mean, you know, people like me and others have been talking about the microchip agenda for decades, but it's more than that. It's the nanotechnology agenda as well.
So transhumanism is basically using technology, applying it kind of like a cyborg to a human being,
yeah,
and
yeah,
enhancing various faculties through technological means.
Well, that's the sales pitch. Yes, I mean, like I was starting to talk about a little earlier, the pattern has been get them addicted to technology, which they hold in their hands, then move to the, this is the totalitarian tiptoe. Then move to what they call wearables. These are your Apple watches, your Google Glass, your Bluetooth on your ear, or whatever. Mm. And then from wearables, you go to, I mean, these have all got names now, official names. You go from wearables to implantables.
Injectables.
I was reading an article in Forbes magazine a few months ago, which was talking about implantables being common within 3 or 4 years. But the thing for me, Richard, is not the things that we can see, although they're bad enough. It's the nanotechnology. And I've got another quote here from Kurzweil, talking about smart dust, if I can find it, talking about, nanobots, as he calls them, nanotechnology in microscopic form. Nanobots will infuse all matter around us with information. Rocks, trees, everything will become these intelligent creatures. What he misses is they're already on a conscious level intelligent, but he's talking about technologically intelligent. And here's a promotion material.
David, isn't this just kind of like, you know, what's the term I'm looking for? This is the urge by technologists who are total materialists who think that when you die, it's like turning off a switch, there's nothing else, and they're looking for a technological way to immortality.
Yeah, but that's an important point. This web is literally a web. You've got a spider in the middle of the web, in the hidden, and then coming out from that web, each strand, the closest it is to the spider, the more exclusive and secretive it is, and then you come out from the spider through the secret societies, and eventually you hit the cusp, as I call it, where the hidden meets the seen. At that cusp, you find Bilderberg Group, Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, organizations like that. And then you come into the scene, scientific research projects, government departments, governments, media, etc., banks. And so in the scene, you've got people who are trying to create something for a certain, in themselves, perceived reason. And I'm sure there are many, many, many people in the transhumanist arena who are seeing it exactly as you've just described. But if you go back into the hidden, into the levels of the spider, you are having this done for a very, very different reason. Here's a quote from a promotion material for what they call smart dust, which is nanotechnology. Mm-hmm. which can float on the air. Smart dust is the ultimate surveillance. These are my words, paraphrasing theirs. Is the ultimate surveillance in that smart dust infusing all matter can recognize an individual anywhere they are, to the extent that their computer can be automatically turned on when they walk through the door at work, and the elevator can automatically open at the right door. So forget, you know, microchip people so they know where you are or they follow you for your smartphone. In this smart world, and of course they're calling it smart dust, smart meters, smart phones, and when you
well,
look
we
at
all want to be smart, David. You don't want
exactly.
to be dumb.
Exactly.
Okay.
Again, it's the word manipulation. But when you look at the definitions of smart technology, it's technology that not only can communicate with other types of smart technology of the same kind, but can communicate with other forms of so-called smart technology. And what they're doing, and they're calling them now the smart grid, the smart cities, they're building these technological isolated human centers where everything will be controlled through artificial intelligence via this system, where the internet, if it's not already, I think it probably is, becomes a form of a conscious entity. And the humans, through this nanotechnology and other transhumanist technology, will be connected to that artificial intelligence. This is the cloud that Kurzweil's really talking about.
This will be the Matrix. The Matrix.
Yes.
Which kind of makes what your son Gareth is singing about kind of cool. The song is called Remember Who You Are. And remember you're on the other side of midnight. And remember to return. We'll be right back.
Stand as one.
And we are back on the other side of midnight. Rich and Keith were able to get the link up for Gareth. You can go to his music, which is right under the last of David's video casts. Just scroll down right above David's bio, and there's a link, http://GarethIke.com. So, David, where do we want to go next? Because we only have half an hour left. There are some people trying to call us. I'm going to hold them off if I can, because I have a bunch of other questions. But I don't want to leave without moving now from the idea of technological transcendence to what I think, based on my work, and I want to compare it to your ideas. I think the physics itself is going to create this connection between people, and it already is, because we're already born with these faculties. We don't need to embed chips. That's what this rising physics is doing. And the people who are awakening now and asking their first questions, like, why have I been lied to by everybody, are going to continue to evolve and change and connect with more people, because the field, the torsion field, is changing, and that's our ultimate way out, technology notwithstanding.
Well, all I've done since 1990, when this thing hit me like a train, is follow my intuition. And that, for me, is where, or a major area that we connect with our higher levels of awareness. And so when my mind, if you like, my head and my intuitive knowing, feeling, has been in conflict, I've always gone with my heart, with my intuition. And what happens after a while is that this war between the head and the heart, the so-called intelligent mind and our intuition of knowing, that war ends when the mind observes that when you go with your intuition, it might get you into some scrapes, it might get you into some challenges, but in the end, it all works out, despite what has happened, which you didn't like, but because of what has happened. It's a process that I've been through so many times. So the reason I say that is my intuition some years ago now was that the period 2016, 2017, 2018 was going to be absolutely crucial.
How the heck did you know, David? Because that's when the physics is peaking.
Well, I didn't know that. I didn't know that, but that's what I've been saying. I've been saying it on the Alex Jones Show a number of times.
So did you actually hear it as a message from someplace, or was it just kind of like the river? You followed the river to where it would take you.
You just know. It's like if the number 10 was in front of me now, I would know I was looking at a number 10. Mm-hmm. And the intensity of knowing is just as intense as looking at number 10 and realizing it's number 10. And so the other intuition, and it's not just your own intuition. It's the reality you manifest around you. So when I'm given a choice to make, I don't make the choice on working it out. I'll make it on does my intuition say yes, or does it say no? And my last world tour was in 2011, and I came back absolutely exhausted, and I thought, am I going to do this again? And so what I was doing was big events at Wembley in London, which went out on the net and stuff, so I didn't have to travel. But my intuition, and you know, my other son Jamie, who's a fantastic organizer and help for me, was saying the same thing. Let's do a world tour, and my intuition just screamed, yes, go, do it. So what I've done is said yes to everything. I mean, it's an open-ended world tour, going all the way through 2016 from June, and then into 2017, and on it goes. And I'm just saying yes. I don't think I've said no to anything. And then not realizing that, it just occurred to me when it was all starting to flow. It's starting in 2016. It's going into 2017, and I'm thinking those years again. So I think what we are seeing, and what we will see, and I agree with what you just said, is an exponential expansion of awareness, questioning, reevaluation, a reevaluation of self identity and the nature of self, a reevaluation of the world, and I think in many ways this transhumanist agenda is not only to further control humans for the sake of controlling humans. So I think there's a massive element of that. It has become almost a defense mechanism against this awakening. And therefore, look, let's get them connected to this flipping cloud before they really wake up, because we're in real trouble if they do that.
That's exactly what I was laying out. Now, if we posit that history on the biggest scale is about control and manipulation and power and social engineering on a scale that most people would freak out, I mean, that would make the Nazis look like pikers, is it not possible, David, that there was an anticipation thousands, tens of thousands of years ago in those other incredibly sophisticated cultures we've now identified around this planet and on other planets and bodies in the solar system? There's a whole bunch of junk out there that somebody made, David, that it wasn't us. We're latecomers. So I'm looking at this through that lens, and the fact that all the research people that I have brought on board tomorrow morning, you know, the show following yours, we're going to do 2 hours of laying out again for people stunning stuff that's out there that NASA and the other space agencies are photographing in close-up that are undeniably ancient things, junk built by somebody, not us, presaging a history, an extraordinary history, that somehow in modern times, modern being the last, you know, let's say million years, is being modulated by these changes in the physics. So we go through alternately very bright periods where we're all connected and everything works right, the so-called golden age in the Greek mythologies.
Right.
And then we get progressively dumber and stupider and more bestial, so that when a Trump arrives calling on the worst of us, We congregate when we raise our heads and begin to ask questions. We congregate to that bright bauble because it's resonating with the worst of us, but it's not resonating with all of us. And this concatenation of consciousness and synchronicity and timing, I don't think is accidental, David. I think it's been planned on both sides, the controllers and the liberators. And we don't see any evidence of these puppet masters, but we see all the puppets in view, and we hopefully have to follow the directions of the puppets to see who the puppeteers are behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, much of the alternative media stops at the puppets.
Yep.
And if you don't go beyond that, because obviously, Richard, when you look at it, this thing can be, this whole manipulation can be charted back thousands of years. People don't live for thousands of years. The puppets come, the puppets go, the puppets come, the puppets go. So there has to be some common theme that actually transcends all that. There has to be. I mean, it's just basic common sense.
Yep.
And there's two ways of looking at it, and either could be true, and probably in the nature of reality, both are true, that there is an experiential flow of energy which offers different experiences over different cycles. And then there is that which must express and manifest that energy in those cycles, if you follow
mm-hmm,
me.
So therefore...
The question is that which is behind what is going on a creation in and of itself with an agenda in and of itself, or is it an expression of an experiential flow of energy which has its ups and has its downs? That's both could be true, one could be true.
Cool part about science is we can figure it out. We have this incredible ongoing experiment, David. We can chart this. We can make, like I'm watching the polarization, Trump on the one side, Bernie on the other, but both sets of people have the same yearning to be free.
Yeah.
Michael has joined us.
Turn
your radio down. Come on, turn your radio down.
And clearly, they weren't trying. It was obvious they weren't trying.
Kill it.
Putin did by coming in and trying.
Oh, you've got to kill your radio.
But they weren't trying.
Michael,
so,
I'm sorry.
Ways of looking at this.
Kill your radio, Michael.
If you had done things differently, things would have been different.
No, can't have that. Sorry, guys. When you call, remember, if you're hovering in that circle, you have to mute your mic. You have to listen some way so you know when I bring you on, which is like listen to your device, and then you'll know that you're about to go on the air. But you can't... You can't just blast everybody with ancient information. So, sorry, David.
Yeah. So, when you look at the world purely as the world appears to be, you can see no answers. All you can see is an impossible situation, and I think a lot of the alternative media has got caught in that. And I understand why, because if you only look at it on that level, that's all you can see. But I, funnily enough, look at it with great optimism, because I'm looking at it from another level of reality, the level of reality that from which the reality we experience is only an expression. It's only a decoded projection. And therefore, I can see, and people that come from this point of view can see the way the world can change with great rapidity because of the background. The way I see this universe is as a quantum computer, and I liken it to Wi-Fi. This computer in front of me, if I had Wi-Fi, would be taking something from the unseen and turning it into a collective reality, which everybody anywhere in the world can log into. And I think the human body biological computer is logged into this, what I call cosmic internet, and we are interacting with it. It's an interactive universe in the sense that We take information from it, but we also, by our actions and our perceptions and et cetera, we post upon it. So it's interactive, just like the internet is. And if you are in a five sense only mode, if you like, we talked about earlier, if you're deep in phantom self, the frequency range that you are interacting with this quantum universe on is very narrow. So your perception of everything is very narrow. As you awaken and expand your awareness, you start to interact with this field in a much more expansive way. And therefore, you have access to more and more of the information that it contains. And therefore, you start to see things in a different way. And so we are in a situation where this expansion of consciousness and accessing more and more awareness, knowledge, understanding is the way that this world will transform far, far quicker than anyone could imagine. If they just look at the five sense world as it is and therefore see only five sense answers to it. Five sense answers are merely five sense problems looking for more solutions that become problems. That's why the world goes on as it is. The answer is to go beyond the five senses in our perception of everything into consciousness. Now, if you are in the alternative media, and you have bought into, say, a rigid religion, or you have bought into mainstream science being the only explanation for anything, then although you are aware, more aware, in the sense that you can see dots connecting and names, dates, places, levels of information and manipulation, you're still stuck in the program to the extent that you will not see any answers outside the five senses. You'll see stockpiling weapons, stockpiling this, stockpiling that, fighting the enemy, which of course just adds power to this reality that we have, which is based on fighting and polarity. So the answer is spiritual has connotations in terms of religion. That's another word that's been hijacked. But you know what I mean? The change is not going to take place in the five sense world from the five sense world, because the five senses, five sense world is like the movie on the screen. You can stand on the stage of a movie theater and you can attack the screen and you can hurl abuse at the screen for as long as you like, but the movie ain't going to change. You've got to change where it's being projected from and change the movie. And that is at the deeper levels of self beyond the scene.
And we seem, David, to be poised, if we bring these two models, yours and mine, together, we seem to be poised on the eve of stunning potential human changes, not through just technology, which are kind of like distractions, baubles, as you said a moment ago, to keep us from continuing down the path where it's available to ourselves, and then we have to decide what to do with it. So as people are waking up, what do you recommend that they do?
Well, first of all, technology is absolutely the diversion, because another thing that's been hijacked in terms of a word and perception is human advancement, moving forward. Well, who says technology is moving forward? Going to a state of awareness and self-manifestation that is beyond the need for technology is really the way, quote, forward. And the technology side is a cul-de-sac. Of course, it has benefits at certain levels of awareness to overcome the limitations of that awareness. But once you get into much more expanded levels of awareness, then you start to get into the level of manifestation rather than having to go via technology to do it. I would go back.
You mean like in Sai Baba territory?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think you've got to watch a lot of all that too. There are cul-de-sacs everywhere. But I mean, the ability to manifest what we call physical, the experience of physical through consciousness manifestation. That's where we can go. But we're in a world where the energetic density has been so dense that it's very difficult to do that. As a matter of course, therefore, you bridge that gap, you bridge that limitation with technology. You
see, that's where these two ideas get together, because in my model, the yuga cycles are charting the up and down of this physics. When the physics is, when surf's up, mental and spiritual and consciousness abilities are stunningly obvious, and we don't need technology. When the surf is down, like it is now, or just beginning to rise again, you need all the technology you can get to simulate those things that in those eras, those thousands of years when there was no need for technology because you could literally reimagine reality and bingo, there it was. I mean, imagine the kind of awful people given that power, David, that we would not be able to live on the planet with if someone like a Hitler could merely envision 6 million Jews dead. And like, you know, remember Bill Mumy, you know, wished them into the cornfield, the Twilight Zone episode? So there are real dangers to unfettered consciousness depending upon the legacy of that consciousness, and has it evolved to where it can handle these godlike abilities without instrumentality?
Well, that's the fork in the road we're standing on.
Yes.
Now, and the decision is which way do we go? And I think in the next 3 years, they are very, very an important period, a vital period to decide, not totally, but to a significant extent, which way this goes. Because if you look at the exponential curve of transhumanism and that kind of technology, it's moving so fast. People need to become aware of its true agenda rather than buying the pixel version of it and the promotion version of it, that it's going to make us all superhuman. It's not.
Like I said, if you can imagine, David, millions of people hooked in either through implants or wearables into the cloud, and then someone throws a switch and you've got Night of the Walking Dead or the zombie apocalypse, I said a moment ago, for real.
Well, that's, I mean, you know, when I've been talking, you know, during our chat about one of the great forms of mind control and suppression is to suppress the sense of the possible. But a lot of people, obviously not many listeners to shows like this who are listening to it by choice, but the vast majority of people would find that like beyond their capacity to process. But this is actually what is happening. And so in terms of how people can deprogram, like I said earlier, it's a case of sitting down and just looking, processing back where the views and opinions and rigid opinions have come from. And if they recognize that they've actually come from in different expressions of the same source, which is this system, then they can then have the ability to say, well, hold on a minute. It's like the dominoes falling again. It's like, hold on a minute. If I believe this and it's not true, what else have I believed that's not true? That's the point. That's the point when you go from, well, yeah, well, okay. I'll look at this little bit. That's not true, is it? And that's the first thing. And then it comes. So what else do I believe that's not true? And that's when the bubble starts to burst and the true reality and the true self starts to open. So it's not being welded and dependent and almost in a state of worship to the system's version of everything. It's to say, hold on, okay, I'll listen to what you say, but I'm going to make sure that it justifies a place on my now blank sheet of paper before I'll believe it and accept it. And that's the process I've found anyway, that most easily starts to unravel these layers of programming, one on top of the other. And of course, with this, what I call the truth vibrations, and of course you have your own name for it, this process of undoing this programming web that engulfs people gets more and more easy, because there's an energy, an information energy, an urging, an awareness that's pushing you in that direction and pushing more and more people in that direction. And the more people that awaken to it and start to attach to it through expansion, they start then resonating its frequency. And so now you're walking down a supermarket aisle and you're resonating that frequency. You're starting to impact upon people who will never know where the initial impact to get them to say, well, you know, I'm going to have a look at life again. I'm going to have another look at this. They never know where it started. But, you know, people become broadcasters, generators of this energy because they become part of this energy.
Well, we call this the mass consciousness effect, and we've tried some experiments here, and Art years ago tried some, and George has tried some. And they actually, if you can eliminate all the extraneous parameters, they seem to work. So if you combine, if you hook up people's consciousness on a worldwide tour like you're doing, your timing, David, is impeccable, because as people are beginning to ask the question, you're providing possible, like a smorgasbord, you're providing answers in a buffet, but you're not saying you have to believe this, but it's like,
oh, absolutely.
While you're kind of waking up here, take a look at this. So where do you start first? Where does the tour begin? Where and when?
Well, I'm starting down the road for me, about 4 miles, on a little Isle of Wight just off the south coast of England, because there I ad-lib the whole thing, and it involves about 1,500 to 2,000 images and stuff. Because I talk from, well, the events are from 10 in the morning till 10 at night in four sections, which all interconnect. It's a massive dot connecting operation. And then because I ad-lib it, I've got to check it for time. So I'm doing a little warm-up. And then I do London in June. And then I go to Perth, Sydney, Brisbane, and Melbourne and Auckland. Then I come in September to New York, Los Angeles and San Francisco. And then I go all over Europe. And I tell you what's interesting, certainly in relation to what we've been talking about, is that I've never in my life gone into Romania. But someone came on and said, would you come and speak in Romania? And of course, yes, I will, because of what we talked about earlier. The number of tickets for that event, it holds about 4,000 people, that have already gone, and it's not until November in Romania, is just incredible. This is a worldwide wake-up. It really is, as you've acknowledged yourself in your own work. This is not some country or this is a worldwide wake-up, and it's impacting across the great spectrum of human life and human society. It's a wonderful, wonderful time. Very challenging, wonderful time to be here.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we've got this evening. I want to reserve some time here to thank my guest, David Icke. By all means, go click on othersideofmidnight.com, the homepage, for the banners. Click on the banners for the worldwide tour. David, if with your permission, I want to kind of dip into your tour at some point, and if the times sync up, because you're all over the world, we might just carry a portion of what you're doing live, just so people can hear what you sound like in front of a live interactive audience. Maybe we'll pick the time just around questions so people get a feeling for the people who are waking up and asking questions.
Yeah, okay, let's see how it goes.
Okay, David, my friend David Icke.
After all this time.
Thank you, David. Thanks so much. Well, that's an end of another episode of The Other Side of Midnight. Until the same time tomorrow morning, when we're going to venture out into the solar system once again and look at all the evidence that there's so much more that is not yet being discussed. So until then, just remember, third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everyone.